The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in, everyone. You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox shut out the Texas Rangers this afternoon, 5-0. Four different pitchers combining for the shutout in this one. Red Sox win the series before they head on the road to face the Kansas City Royals. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman and Jim Delfino. So, guys, pretty good win. Shut out the Rangers, so you get the series win. Good day for Rafael Devers on the field. Not so great off the field. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. But, Jim, I'll start with you. Just your instant reaction to the victory and sort of how they're trending now that they're heading on the road.
Well, I think this is a huge win. They really needed to come out and be a force today. I feel that they needed to score a decent amount of runs. I'll take the 5 runs. And I was really concerned about how Bayo was going to look. You know, he's been pretty good since he's come back off the IL. Today was a little bit of a tough one. 5 walks is not ideal. And of course, going 4 2/3 innings is obviously not ideal either. But, you know, luckily enough, we were able to piecemeal it together. I got a little bit nervous when Whitlock came out. You know, he hasn't looked good lately, but he did fine. 1 hit, couple strikeouts. He did have a walk. And then finishing off with Hendricks, 2 innings. He's been looking pretty good. He's got his ERA down about 2.25 now. And so he looked pretty good. So that's a pitching side. Offensively, you know, great day for Devers, as you said, home run and another hit. You know, Navarez had a hit. And I think that was about it. No, Rafaela had a couple hits too. I apologize. So 6 hits in total. But they got the 5 runs. Leiter didn't look that sharp. I don't think he's really been that sharp to begin with. But moving forward, an important win. They're going to face some stiff competition now with Kansas City and with Detroit. And so it's not going to be an easy one.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what, you dropped the first game. It was ugly. You've had a couple of ugly series, and you dropped 3 out of 4 previously to Texas. I mean, it looked pretty close to the bottom of the floor dropping out on you. And then you come back, you have a decent start from Hauk. Bayo battled today. Unfortunately, you can't say it was a step forward. He has won every start so far he's made. So in all 4 of his starts, the Red Sox have won those games. I think he's been credited with 3 of the wins. Today, he was just a little bit, he didn't quite make it 5 innings, so he wasn't eligible for the win. But I'm happy we've won the series. You're going to Kansas City, who has won 16 over the last 18. They are the hottest team in Major League Baseball. That's going to take place at Kauffman. So they're going to have home field. That is kind of a pitcher's park. So our pitching matchups, last I looked, and it was ESPN, so take that for what it's worth. But you're going to get Giolito in there. And I thought there was one more start that wasn't super favorable. It might be Hauk again. I'm not sure. Crochet goes in that series, so that'll be good. But
the other start is Dobbins.
Just real quick. Dobbins. Yes. Yep. Right. Who I love watching. So I don't know how it's going to end, but he's got some good off-speed stuff. So we'll see. How his season progresses, but yeah, and we took some flack from I'm not going to mention any names, but it was definitely Johnny Fontaine and on Rafaela, and Rafaela had a big game today. So you got a lot out of your offense.
Yeah, the offense was good. Bayo, like you said, he battled. It was a weird start for him. The stuff looked good. Like, the velocity was there. He was mixing up his pitches, but he just got a little too meticulous and wasn't painting the corners the way that he wanted to, and that's what led to the five walks. So definitely a weird start where you can walk five guys in less than five innings and, you know, you still don't give up a run. So he had a little bit of luck there. But I will say this is also a good game for Alex Cora because Bayo was at 83 pitches, you know, had gone 4 2/3. There was one more out to get, but Texas had two guys on with Adolis Garcia coming up, and Cora pulled him. Cora went out, pulled Bayo, which is a tough move as a manager because you're basically telling him you're not going to get the decision, which, you know, some pitchers care about that, some don't. But for a young guy like Bayo who's still trying to build his profile, he might. I'm sure Bayo at 83 pitches thought, I can get Garcia, let me get him, and just then I'll come out of the game. But Cora made the right move. He saw that Bayo was kind of struggling all game and decided, you know what, let's go with Slayton. You know, even on the broadcast, they were saying, you know, it's interesting, Slayton's a late inning guy and Cora's bringing him in the fifth. That tells me that Cora really wanted this one. He didn't want Texas to get that third game. He wanted a win before they go out on the road, which I thought was important. So good on Cora for being aggressive and sort of saying, look, you know, Brian, it sucks that you're gonna get a no decision for this one, but we need this game. We need to win this one. We need to get some momentum under ourselves, especially heading on the road facing two tough teams. So I thought that was a good move. Slayton looked good. Whitlock looked very good. And, you know, Hendricks, those final two innings, he was fine. Velocity was good. He wasn't missing any bats, but he was getting a lot of pop-ups and weak contact. So at this rate with Liam Hendricks, you'll take that. So ultimately, your offense did what it had to do. Most of it was Devers and Rafaela today, but that's okay. You're going to have games like that, especially with the way the offense is going. So they did enough. They won the game, and now you can kind of head on the road, at least with some momentum off on the field. But off the field, guys, there are some problems. And it's a nice win. You know, it's great to celebrate that. But after the game is when the real fireworks took place. So obviously Tristan Casas being out for the entire season, you know, not great. You're looking for first base help. You're looking for a solution there. And, you know, I remember Tuesday we were talking about it saying, well, you know, why not just ask Devers? Why isn't Cora asking Rafael Devers? Like, what's going on here? And so we got some comments from Rafael Devers after the game today, where he basically admitted that it wasn't Cora who talked to him about going to first base. It was Craig Breslow. It was the general manager, or whatever his official title is, president of baseball ops, whatever you want to call him. Breslow had the sit-down conversation with Devers and asked him to go to first base. And Rafael Devers said no. And again, so this is all coming through translation. So, you know, bear with us on that. But essentially he said no. And some of Devers' comments were, you know, I don't think it's appropriate for them to ask me to play first base. They already asked me to play, to go to DH. They basically asked me to put my glove away. And he, you know, he mentioned that, you know, his initial thing with Breslow, he said, why is Craig Breslow talking to me? What does he have to do with me? And, you know, what's he got against me? Like, I don't understand that. He's a former player. He should understand how difficult it is to switch positions. He had later comments about, you know, I think it's unfair. Like, they asked me to play DH, but then if someone gets hurt in the outfield, are they going to ask me to go play the outfield too? And Devers basically said that he thinks Breslow should look outside. He should look at the trade market or free agent market and go get a first baseman there. So essentially Devers' comments came off as, nope, I'm not going to do it. You know, screw you guys. You took my position away. You told me to put my glove away. And you should just figure it out because I'm not going to do it. So definitely a lot of fireworks coming out of it after the game regarding the first base position. Jim, I'll start with you. You're just your reaction to all that when it, because it all came out after the game. Like, you get this nice win, you're on the road now, okay, you win 2 out of 3 with Texas, you're on the road, and then all of a sudden the Rafael Devers situation blows up again. What were your thoughts about all that?
Yeah, so great timing as they're going to go on the road so that they don't have to be in front of the fans at Fenway. I'm ticked off. The bottom line here is that you are an employee of the Boston Red Sox. You are making $300-plus million in a contract for 10 years. If the team gets an injury like it has, unforeseen, I think you got to cowboy up a little bit. You should be able to say to ownership or management, hey, listen, I'll go ahead and do it. I'll play first base. We're a better team if I'm out there on first base and we can get another bat in the DH slot. I think it's disingenuous. I think it's outright disgusting what he's doing. You know, don't give me any of this. Well, you took the third base job away from me. You want me to be a DH and this and that. He sounds like a damn crybaby. I don't, you know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, at the end of the day, they should just tell him, look, you're going to play and you're going to play first base. And this is what we want you to do. The problem is there's so much coddling going on with a lot of these players now that they don't want to upset them and so forth. And I think it's absolutely just ridiculous. But, you know, I'm upset. And if anything, things better change quickly because, you know, it makes a lot of sense for him to play first base unless, like I said the other day, they bring up somebody like Grissom. But they need more. They need more offensive production out of first base now. And, you know, I just think his comments are really poor taste, period.
All right. So, spoiler alert. I'm the only pro Devers guy on this crew, and I'll accept the assignment. So I just want to just a refresher here before I give my take. In the years prior to this, nobody's ever questioned the effort that Devers has put forth. Okay. The errors have been frustrating, but they haven't been for a lack of effort. He has really been, I mean, we just went through a very dark era of Red Sox baseball throughout the bulk of the Bloom years here. He was basically one of the only things keeping us relevant in that time. And, you know, he's your franchise player. I said multiple times last winter before the Breslow signing, when the Breslow signing happened, if you haven't noticed, I chilled out and we got at least one key right-handed bat, and he wasn't my first choice, but at least we did something and we got him. And I think in hindsight, he's probably been the best choice. I mean, I don't know if anybody's worth $40 million, but he's in the top 5 or 10 in so many categories, and he's leading Major League Baseball right now in doubles. That's my favorite category. If you're leading in doubles, chances are all the other categories are pretty good too. You know, you probably still have a bunch of home runs anyway. You've probably driven in a bunch. I'm pro doubles, so it's worked out. But this is my big thing. This is the root of why I'm pro Devers here, and I've mentioned this throughout the winter multiple times, several times. Breslow isn't a likable guy. Okay, he's very vanilla. He's very plain. He's not personable. He's not empathetic. He's not sympathetic. And I've even questioned, and as far back as last season, I don't know. He's just so green. I don't think he handles himself well with other executives and players' agents when he's trying to facilitate deals. I think he's very robotic. I don't think he's that Dave Dombrowski, Theo Epstein guy. And maybe it's not fair for me to expect that this soon, but I don't think he understands the art of the deal. And I think it trickles down to players. I don't think he manages players well as an executive. Not that he's the first guy in line to do that, but I think he walked in, just said, you know what? I've got Bregman now. I don't care what Devers thinks. I don't care what he means to this organization. He's my DH, and I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. Raffy all winter long was constantly wanting assurances. Am I still the third baseman? You know, and he went through a round of Bregman rumors. Then he went through a round of Arenado rumors, and then it got pretty quiet for a couple months. Then the Arenado stuff cropped up. Then we finally got Bregman. A Jeff Passan report came out seconds after the Bregman signing, saying that it is expected Bregman's going to be playing second base, until he wasn't. So it was an emotional roller coaster season for Devers, and I think the Red Sox botched it. And one of the key ways they could have avoided this was to simply get rid of Tristan Casas. Okay, they didn't get the package they wanted, so they kept him. But what's he worth now? In hindsight, he's worth nothing. And we might have to have the aggravation of him coming back, slumping brutally like he has. And I just don't want to keep reliving that. And had you done that and you just said, look, Raf, we're just going to move you over to first base, and you might not like it, but you're still on the field. You're still a big part of what we're doing here. And I think they would have had to have been a lot more tactful about it than they were, here we are. And I think Devers has them by the balls now. I mean, anybody can go from whatever position to DH. There's no real transition there. You know, it's the one position everybody can play. You know, if Devers doesn't want first base, it's hard for them to really force it, you know, and if his heart's not in it, it's not going to go well, you know? So first base is usually a spot where guys go to keep their career relevant, you know, and Bryce Harper had to do it, and Vladimir Guerrero had to do it, I think, either in or right after his rookie year, got moved over to first. So we'll see what happens there. But I put this more on Breslow. He botched it. I think there was a massive failure of leadership. We still have a surplus of guys. When Roman Anthony comes up, how does Willy Abreu get at bats? Like, that's a problem too. Not at the moment, but it's about to be. And, you know, and I think Tristan Casas, you probably should have moved him. He's left-handed, you know, so you get a little bit more balance. But I hate Breslow more, and we'll see. And I guess I was going to save this take. I may as well give it right now. It'll be brief. If I'm Raffy Devers, I probably would cave and go to first, okay? Because you might have to call up Yoshida. I don't like it. Since the rumors before we even signed him, I've been eviscerating that signing. But I still think a Yoshida, Ref Snyder platoon at DH is going to be way more production than Casas would have given you at first base. I think those two players combined are going to give you decent production, and then Devers will hopefully continue to do so at first. But if I'm Devers, this is what I do. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little here, but I bust down Breslow's door and I tell him, say, listen, I'm going to move to first base, but you're never, ever taking me off of it. That is my position. You don't have anybody else in your system. I'm never being a DH again. And one of the points I forgot to bring up, Jason did bring it up. Devers kept saying, they told me to throw my glove away. I don't need my glove anymore. I'm not a position player anymore. That's been weighing on his mind. Okay. So I tell Breslow, you're never taking me off of it. I make more money than you. I'm more important to this organization than you. And I'm going to be here long after you leave, long after you get fired. I'm never coming off of first base. That's how I handle it if I'm Raffy Devers. And then, you know, let's never speak about it again. But it probably does have to happen, because there's a massive logjam if it doesn't happen.
Yeah. And to piggyback of what you were saying about, you know, Devers kind of kicking in the door and saying, look, I'll play first base, but that's my position now. Keep in mind the elephant in the room that people don't want to talk about because it's an offseason problem. The year that Alex Bregman's having so far, he's going to opt out. He's out of here. Yeah. If he keeps going the way he's going, he's gone. So now you're going to have first base with Tristan Casas not ready for opening day. There's no way he'll be ready for opening day next year. Probably won't see him until June. And who knows what he'll be when he comes back. And you'll have a vacant third base. So if you're Devers, you can storm into that office and go, pretty soon you're going to have no corners. Like, after this season, you won't have a first baseman. You won't have a third baseman. So give me a glove. I'll take first base for now. I'll do it because I can do it. But I want to reopen the whole idea of me playing third base again when this is all said and done. He absolutely has a leverage to do that. The Red Sox don't have a Roman Anthony version at the corners in their farm system. They don't. The closest thing they have is Blaze Jordan, and he might stink. He might never see the light of day in the major leagues. So he might be a 4A Bobby Dalbec kind of guy. So Devers has a ton of leverage because, again, they don't have a version of him waiting in the wings in the minors. And the Casas injury, that's a big one. If he's ready by Memorial Day next year, that'll be a shock. So that, you know, first base is already, like, you need him there. And like I said, Bregman, he's going to opt out if he keeps going like this. So they're going to have two problems pretty soon. But at least for the immediate, yeah, Devers should be playing first base. And I get your point about the Red Sox completely bollocks it in the offseason with the whole, you know, the press conference at the start of the winter. Oh, no, we believe in Rafi's defense. We believe he can improve. We're not worried about it. To, you know, a week later, oh, the Red Sox are interested in Nolan Arenado and Alex Bregman. Like, those rumors were swirling. Anyone with half a brain saw what they were doing. And they bring Bregman in. They say, oh, no, he's going to play second base. Don't worry about it. That lasted like 3 days. And then they started playing him at third base. Rafi still wasn't ready. And, you know, we were frustrated with Devers in the winter and in the spring because he wasn't getting in the lineup. And, you know, maybe that's, you know, it is what it is. But he's sitting there going, guys, I'm still trying to get my swing right, and I'm still trying to get ready with, you know, the two bad shoulders I had last year, and you've already replaced me. You said third base was going to be mine. Now you've already put him there. So it was kind of like out of Rafael Devers' hands. Like, yep, you're going to DH because you couldn't be ready by the start of spring training, and Bregman was. So that's frustrating on his part. And now you've got, you know, this massive injury, and you're asking him to go to first base. Look, I think eventually he's going to do it. I don't think Rafael Devers is going to sit here and pout for an entire season while the team cycles through the Abraham Toros of the world at first base. Devers is sick of losing. He is. He's sick of losing. He's sick of not being in the playoffs. He knows deep down the best thing for the team is for him to pick up a first base glove and go there. And then they can be flexible with the DH spot, whether they want to call up Yoshida or whether they just want to do what we all think they should do and call up Roman Anthony already and put him at DH or whatever, cycle your outfielders that way. Devers knows that. He's not that stupid. So I think the comments didn't do him any favors because he comes off as a petulant child, but I get his point. The organization has screwed this up from the very beginning. And I mentioned this on Tuesday's show, like, the Tristan Casas injury, I'm not saying that you could see it coming because no one saw that coming, but he is a guy who has missed a lot of time with injuries, and you didn't have a backup plan at first base. Your backup plan was Abraham Toro, who's not even a natural first baseman, by the way. He's a third baseman by trade. Like, first base is not his natural position. Like, that's pathetic. So, yeah, now they're scrambling. Now they're having to go to Devers and sort of with a mea culpa and ask him to play first base after telling him he's not going to play the field ever again. He has every right to be pissed. I understand that side of it, but I also look at it from like the Kevin Millar side. Kevin Millar in the booth on Tuesday night was saying, look, I played first base, but they asked me to play third one day with a terrible arm, and I did it. They asked me to play left field and right field when they knew I could barely move and had a terrible arm, and I did it. He's like, because I wanted to win. And he's like, that's just what you do. And it's a different generation of players. I get that. But that's more what I would expect from a guy like Rafael Devers. Just, yeah, you want me to play first base? Okay. And look, if what we're seeing from the sort of revised comments, you know, people with their own translators all over Twitter now say, well, no, he said that it's going to take him time to learn. That's all. Okay, if that's what it is, fine. Lou Maloney brought that up tonight. He's like, look, he's going to have his scuffles. That's okay. No one's expecting him to go to first base and become a Gold Glover right away. It's okay if he has a couple of, you know, rough games or, you know, boots a couple balls, whatever, while he gets used to it. But just be willing to do it. When you sit there and say, well, they told me to put my glove away, so I'm not picking up my glove again. Like, you come off as a petulant adolescent, like, baby. It's just, that's not what you want from a guy who's the highest paid player on your team. So I get Devers' frustration, but he also needs to put that aside now. Okay, like, you can bitch about it all you want later. If you want to write a book later on like Francona did, fine. I don't care. For right now, can you get your ass to first base so we can start winning games and putting better lineups out there and stop whining to the media the few times you actually want to talk to them? Like, that's what I'm more concerned about. It's like the team is kind of going back and forth. They're teetering a little bit. Yeah, they won today, but they're still not in a great spot. Get your ass to first base, stop whining, and just do it. And if you want to whine later, go ahead. You want to whine about the GM who you clearly hate? Go ahead. You can do it later. For now, can you just do what's best for the team? Like, that's where I'm more like, you know, again, it's May. It's still early. But pretty soon, it's not going to be early anymore. Clock's ticking. Get your ass over to first and whine about it later.
One of the things, real quick, and perhaps this is partly why I'm pro Devers, is this Red Sox front office has been a clown show historically. And I've kind of underlined that in some ways with Breslow, but Devers is like raising the alarm on that right now. Like, he's kind of forcing the clown show to kind of kick back into gear. They're all scrambling right now. And Devers does have the leverage. I honestly don't believe there's a way they can just pencil him in there without him, you know, taking reps, you know, for a week or so before games and all that. So it's like I said, it's not like sending him to DH. Like, it's a new position and, you know, it's a transition. So I think Devers has him by the balls as far as that goes, but I'm not, it doesn't make me sad right now that Craig Breslow is probably shitting his pants. Like, that makes me happy. And I hope it's a lesson to him in the future on how you handle players and how you don't handle players. So I just wanted to throw that one out there.
And the other thing too is Devers is pulling what I complained about on Tuesday with the fan base, saying, oh, Breslow should just go out there and get somebody. I'd said this before. No one is trading you their first baseman in May. They're not doing it. And the only, as far as I can see, free agent market, the only guy out there is Anthony Rizzo, who I think is cooked. And I know it's I know that's like a fan favorite story. The team that drafted him, he finally gets to play for him, blah, blah, blah. He's cooked, guys. He really is. Like, yes, he can probably field the position just fine. His bat will frustrate the hell out of you. And that's a guy who the last two seasons with the Yankees couldn't play more than 100 games because he kept getting hurt. So likely he would end up on the IL anyway. I love Rizzo, but it's like 5 years too late on that guy. So that's the other thing with Devers too, is like, don't just say, I'll go get someone. No, like in May, that's not as feasible as you think.
I also heard something too about Rizzo. I think it was on one of the radio casts. He said something that he would want a significant contract. I guess he just had a baby, and he wants a significant contract to come back and leave that. So he's not getting it from Boston. But just piggybacking on the Devers thing again, I think one of the problems that we have here is that we're led to believe, because he's the highest paid player on the team, that he's a leader. And the reality is he's not. And again, how to say this with being politically correct is tough. Typically, you know, I mean, they interview him, he understands in English, but speaks in Spanish. You know, that's an issue too. I mean, typically most of the guys that are either the highest paid players or whatnot, they're the ones in the limelight and the spotlight, having to answer the questions and so forth. And so when you have these translators, it, you know, things can get misconstrued very easily. Whether that's the case here or not, if you want to give him a little bit of a pass, that's the only way that I would say it. But he's not a leader. He's not going to be a leader. He's not Dustin Pedroia. You're not going to see that from him. And everybody expects it because he's the highest paid player. He's a child. At the end of the day, you know, like you said, Jay, he's a child. And it's never going to change. So, you know, you just got to hope that he changes his mind. I guess something happened at some point to get him to coax into being DH, and just dealing with that, they're going to have to coax him that way too. And if they don't do it, then they're going to have to start making a move sooner or later, whether it's going to be bringing Grissom up and giving him a chance. Because the guy, you know, again, was traded for Chris Sale. You paid $18 million to have Chris Sale win a Cy Young for you, or for the Braves. And you got this kid, and he's just wasting away now at first base down in AAA. You know, as far as Meyer, what do you do there? Do you move Story to first base? He's tall enough to man the position. His arm, I don't think, is as good as it was years ago. Maybe you move him there and bring Meyer up for shortstop. Does Campbell go to first base? I mean, we've been messing with that kid now, you know, second base, center field. You put him at first base, you know? I mean, if you think that he doesn't have a position, maybe you try him at first base, you know? So there are options there, but the bottom line here is if you want to win and you want to be a championship caliber team, that does not happen with Toro in your lineup as a first baseman. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen with a lot of these guys that they've had. Yu Chang at shortstop, and you know, some of these guys, those are not championship caliber players. They're okay if they come up and there's an injury and you need a couple games from somebody, but that's not winning. Winning starts with getting the best players on the field and in the lineup on a nightly basis.
I just want to pivot real quick. You know, this caught us off guard today. We won the series. We got a tough one against the Royals coming up. We didn't think that this wave of controversy was going to hit us out of nowhere. But, you know, as I've tried to process the situation, as all the information has come in, Alex Cora said on, it was either the Sports Hub or WEI, whichever one he makes his weekly appearance on. And he said yesterday they referenced the first base thing with Devers because, you know, Nesson was calling for it. I was calling for it. Rob Bradford was calling for it. I think another beat writer, Sean McAdam, actually on his podcast said, yeah, I think that's where he ends up. And it was all under the premise that Devers would want that. And so it was brought up yesterday, which was the day after everything I just mentioned. And Cora says, well, I kind of like him as my DH. Maybe we'll have a conversation about first in the future, but he's my DH for now. And I'm still taking that at face value. That's what Cora wants. You know, he was one of the big driving forces of getting Devers over to DH. Now I'm second guessing that. I think it's almost entirely Breslow. I referenced the Passan tweet that came out moments after Bregman was signed that he was expected to play first base. I think Alex Cora, to a degree, probably expected that, at least initially after the signing. Cora, over the winter, I think at the winter meeting, spoke passionately about how he's always believed Bregman's a second baseman, and he would tell him that in Houston, but Altuve had the position, Correa was at short, so Bregman had to be a third baseman. And You know, so I just literally in the last few hours, as all of this has developed, maybe Cora wanted him there all along. And then he probably got on board when Breslow put his foot down and said, no, absolutely not. He's going to DH. And then perhaps he did, you know, get on board there. But I think he was pro Raffy throughout the winter. And I took the position that, you know, based on a lot of things I just said, how Cora had previously spoken about Bregman being a second baseman, I really thought Devers was going to stay at third. And there were a lot of calls last season. I pointed this out numerous times over the winter. He had a rough, I think, May and June or something like that last year. There were all these calls for him to move to DH. And Cora spoke during an interview that he and Devers had a heart-to-heart conversation. And he said, listen, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, because the extension hadn't happened yet. And I think he was feeling the heat himself. He goes, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but for as long as I am, you are my third baseman. So with all of that in mind, I really think, you know, in hindsight now, I think Cora was a strong advocate for keeping Devers there. So, and then yesterday, I think he was protecting Raffy on whatever radio station that is. Listen, he's my DH. I think he was protecting him.
Oh, I 100% agree. I think Alex Cora will always try to protect Rafael Devers. And I think he did want him to stay at third. I think this was a Breslow, and I'm going to say Breslow and the analytics department, because we know it's not just Breslow. You know, he's got a team of nerds that's kind of helping him out. I think they were the ones that said, nope, it's better if he goes to DH and your defense will be better this way, blah, blah, blah. And I think, yeah, I think Cora saying he's my DH was him sort of, in a way, like backing Raffy, being like, no, like, you know, they said you have to be DH, so you're my DH. That's it. Like, I'm not going to talk about the first base thing because that wasn't in the plans. They're only talking about it now because Tristan Casas ripped his knee apart. So, you know, that wasn't in the plans. Their plan was to keep you at DH forever. I mean, and that's true. If it were up to Breslow, Rafael Devers would never see the field again. Because the plan was Bregman at third, Casas at first, and, you know, I'm sure Breslow maybe in his mind thought, if we get close to a championship or we at least make the ALCS or whatever, then maybe Bregman doesn't opt out and he stays to, you know, quote-unquote finish the job or whatever. But yeah, I think it was always in Breslow's mind, when they move him to DH, he's going to be there permanently. Because, you know, years will go on, Devers will get older, and eventually it'll be, well, it doesn't make sense to put him back at third now that he's 33, 34, whatever. You know, they'll just keep cycling that position. So I think I think Cora did defend Devers by saying that. I think Cora was sort of saying, you know, the organization pinned this on you, and, you know, first base was not supposed to be an option, but now it is. And I still agree with you. I think eventually Devers will cave and he'll go to first base. And I still think that's the best thing anyway. But yeah, it just sucks that we have to go through this kind of drama, especially after a win, you know, just because the organization, Breslow, the front office couldn't handle it correctly from the first place. Like, that's really frustrating.
You got a thought, Jim?
Well, you know, as far as Bregman's concerned, I don't think there was any chance he was playing second base for this team. I think all along it was to be known that he was going to be the third baseman, because I think a lot of it was factoring on the fact that they were probably going to move Casas and maybe put Devers at first base back in the offseason. Obviously, they could not trade Casas. He has no trade value, and that was back when he wasn't injured. And I think they really wanted to try to pry one of the pitchers from Seattle, whether it be any one of them. George Kirby, whatever. The bottom line here is that none of that worked out. They couldn't move him. They were stuck with him. So they had to try to appease him and say, listen, you know, we'll put you DH and, you know, you don't have to play the field anymore and so forth. So that's my feeling on that. And I don't really think Breslow wanted Bregman either. Back at the winter meetings, I got wind of the fact that there was a argument in the lobby of the hotel between Breslow and Cora and a couple others. And then about 20 minutes after I heard that, Chris Cotillo had the same tweet. So I don't think he was really wanting to have Bregman. I think it was more of a Cora decision, Sam Kennedy decision. But, you know, be that as it may, Bregman's been fantastic. So we know that. But I just don't think there was any chance he was playing second base for this team. They wanted Campbell at second from day one. They wanted to bring him up. And so that just ousted Devers to the DH spot. And I, to Jay's point, I think it's 100% accurate. Once they decided that, you know, Costas was not going to be able to be moved, he was going to be the first baseman moving forward, it made it a simpler transition to just say Devers would be the DH and that would be the end of it. But now he suffered an injury. And now it's a whole different dynamic. Can we get Devers or anybody to say, look, this is an unforeseen circumstance. We need to cowboy up and we need to be team players here. Whether it's just for the rest of this season and then they bring him back to DH, I don't know. Of course, now there's a lot of information coming through that the translation was bad. I don't know if you guys are seeing that through some of the timelines. And that he said that he would need time to be able to do it. He couldn't just do it tomorrow. We know that. I mean, there's no way he's going to go and play first base tomorrow night in Kansas City. He's going to need time to practice there. Is he doing on the backfields? Probably not. I don't know. But the bottom line is that, you know, I think he'll cave at some point. I think he'll realize that it's probably the best move for the team. I think maybe he's just being a little baby. He wants to pout just like he wanted to pout about third. And I think as time goes on, I think if he sleeps on it, right, and he'll realize that, all right, I'll do it. I think he could be pretty good over there, by the way. You know, he without having to throw, without having to worry about the shoulder injury that he had last year, if Hanley Ramirez can do it, I mean, pretty much anybody can. So I like the idea of him being a first baseman. It sets up a better bat for the DH spot, whether you bring Yoshida back, who they've clearly been, you know, kind of trying to let us know that, well, he could bat, but he can't throw, hint, hint, so he could be the DH. So I would do that first and see where it goes. But time will tell. We'll see.
You know, you make some observations there, and there were reports, like you said, that there was a disagreement on Bregman. I remember that during the winter meetings, I think. And then a report did come out that they wanted to move Devers to first. And, you know, and then I'm after that, I really don't think they thought they were going to get Bregman. You know, because how many times did Boris say over the winter, we're not taking a short-term deal. We're not taking a short-term deal. We're not interested in it. So I really think that, I don't know. I just think Devers wasn't going to be a DH until literally it happened. And they pivoted not long after. I mean, they were just about to report, or maybe they had reported when the Bregman thing happened. It was into February. I remember that. But yeah, just poor management there. I thought I had one more note. I know we're kind of over here. I guess real quick, and we'll wrap it on this. He doesn't have 10-5 rights yet. Those don't kick in for, I think, at least another year and a half or so. And if you're a casual fan, 10-5 rights means if you've been in the league for 10 years and with your current team for the last 5 years, you can veto a trade. And some players will have a no trade clause built into their contract, and that might happen well before 10 years. But if that's not the case, you know, 10 years in the league, five with your last team, you essentially have a no trade clause. So that hasn't kicked in yet. And the reason I'm asking is I don't think there's a way to do it. I don't know if Brett Breslow would be so butthurt that he would do it just to get Devers out of his life. But because Devers is important to the Boston Red Sox, and you're not one or two games above 500 right now without Devers. Devers has been a big factor here. Not as big as Bregman, but a huge factor for keeping us somewhat competitive. And so I'm just wondering, like, let's say theoretically they did trade him. How do they get past the optics of that?
I don't think they could. Not realistically. I mean, especially people are already comparing this situation to Mookie Betts. And that was different because that was more contract related. They just kept screwing him in arbitration, and then he just didn't want to be here. It wasn't a position thing. But yeah, that's, you know, you finally lock up a superstar. You finally pay a guy and you get him to this long-term contract, and then you screw around with his position so badly that the only remedy is you have to trade him away. I mean, at that point, you know, look at the big three, Anthony, Meyer, Campbell, like they're going to lose faith in the organization. Like, why would they want to sign a long-term deal? Because they'll sit there and go, yeah, okay, I can sign a long-term deal. But then if I have one bad defensive season, you're going to try and stick me at DH. Or, you know, it like Roman Anthony is looking at it going, yeah, I want to be an outfielder my whole career. But if I turn 32 when I'm still with the Red Sox, are they going to say, hey, you know what? You're kind of slowing down out there. We think DH might be the best thing for you. Like, that's a scary thought. So if it does come to that, I don't think it will. But if it does, that's kind of like doomsday kind of stuff, because you'll never have the faith of a superstar ever again for your organization. And that's a huge problem.
I think in the case of Roman Anthony, he has Boris as an agent. And so there's just no way he's going to play first base or be a DH at this point, because it won't maximize his money. An outfielder maximizes his money a little bit better. So you won't see anything like that happen probably until he's on the other wrong side of 30. But, you know, bottom line here is that if we wait a little while, I think to the consensus, like Jay said, I think he'll cave. Devers, I mean, and you know, he'll play first, but you know, we'll see, but we'll hang our hats on that.
Well, I guess some good news. I'm fairly certain that his agent is not Scott Boras. Kyle Teals was Scott Boras. But the bad news is he's acting like he is a Boras client, because he very politically maneuvered through the winter. I may sign an extension if it's worth it. It might not be worth it, though, you know, was like his attitude. And I'll tell you what, if he did sign it, his ass would be on the roster right now. I guarantee it. But he didn't, and they knew Campbell would be, so they weren't worried about service time there.
But yep. Well, we got a lot of time to figure out what's going to happen with Rafael Devers. What, you know, when, if he shows up at first base. I think we all agree it's a matter of when, not if. But certainly not going to happen tomorrow, but probably in the near future. So we will wrap on that. Tomorrow night, you've got the Red Sox heading to Kansas City. They've got Hunter Dobbins going for them against Michael Lorenzen. So just real quick, Jim, how do you feel about that matchup? What do you think?
So I think it's the one you've got to make sure that you win. Obviously, game two is Crochet and Reagans and Giolito against Lugo. I think the Crochet-Reagans game could, you know, wind up being a very low-scoring game. I wouldn't be surprised to see a 1-0 loss or victory either way. I have no faith in Giolito whatsoever, especially coming off that last start. I mean, granted, he looked okay in Toronto, You know, his changeup was nails. He was hitting the corners. Hopefully he can bounce back, but I think it's going to set the tone by winning game one. Lorenzen's probably the weakest of those three starters that's going, although he's having a pretty decent season. I think right now he's 3-3 with a 4.23. WHIP is 1.41, 33 strikeouts. I mean, it's not bad. I would take it as a fifth starter. So we'll see. I like what we've been seeing out of Dobbins. I know his last start was a little iffy. It was really his first major issue and in with terms of pitching. His first two outings, he had unbelievable, you know, run support. So it was the most crunching start that he had. But set the tone right, win game one, try to build off that. Hopefully Crochet comes back and has a really dominant game. But Kansas City is just on another planet right now. So I don't know if we can stop them or not, but it all starts with game one. So let's hope that they can do it tomorrow night.
Terry, what do you think?
It's hard to pick against a team that's on such a torrid pace like that. But Lorenzen's been kind of like a poor man's version of Nick Pivetta. You know, he'll give you some nice starts here and there and kind of tease you and make you think he's a bona fide rotation guy, but then he just gets shelled and back to the bullpen. He did give up 5 runs in his last start to Baltimore, and that is an offense that can tune you up. So, you know, if the Red Sox go in there with a chip on their shoulder, perhaps we'll have a shot. I don't think the Kansas City lineup is that scary. Like, I don't think Dobbins should be looking at it like he's about to go into Yankee Stadium and face Judge, Volpe, Goldschmidt, and a couple other hitters. So we'll see. I'll give the Red Sox the slight edge, but man, that Giolito start, hopefully we'll get to it, I guess, after tomorrow night, but hopefully he's got a short leash with someone that can do some long relief in there. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think I'll give the Sox a slight edge in game one. I agree with Jim. It's an important one to win because Crochet, Reagans, that could be a wash. Reagans is right up there with Crochet. If you don't think he is, just tune in on Saturday and you'll find out. He was my Cy Young pick for this year, so I think he's that good. And Sunday, you got Giolito going up against Lugo, who is a professional pitcher who can still find ways to win. He's not what he used to be a couple years ago, but he's still damn good. And your lineup has a tendency to just fall asleep. So I don't feel great about Sunday's game. Saturday is going to be a tight one. Friday's the one. You got to win that start. I think Hunter Dobbins can pitch really well. I think that lineup, Red Sox lineup, can get to Lorenzen. He's easy to get to if you know how. So hopefully that all this Dever stuff is not a huge distraction. Hopefully they pull together. Maybe they have some, you know, good conversations on the flight over and they're relaxed, ready to go. But I'll give a slight edge to the Red Sox, mainly because just they need it. And I do believe in Hunter Dobbins. I think he's that good. So with that, we will wrap this up. We'll be talking to you guys throughout the weekend about the Kansas City series. So everyone have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later. Take care.